Speak up and be assertive, however uncomfortable it feels. Make your decision, because if you don't speak up and you're not assertive and you don't make your decision, somebody else will make your decisions for you. So speak up for yourself, stand up for yourself, be assertive, make that decision, even if it's uncomfortable now, even if it will create discomfort with others a short while from now, because this will benefit you 10 years from now.
Hello and welcome to our program, 10 Lessons Learned, where we talk to business people, journalists, authors, professors, leaders, and luminaries from all over the world. My name is Siebe van der Zee, and I'm your host. I'm based in Phoenix, Arizona, in the beautiful Grand Canyon state. I'm also known as the Dutchman in the desert. Our guest today is Sangrita Moitra, joining us from Amsterdam in the Netherlands. As you will learn during our program, Sangrita has a fascinating background and personality. She uses her academic background in neuroscience to motivate individuals, teams, and business leaders to understand their why and to drive meaningful behavioral change. She is a TEDx awarded keynote speaker and management advisor. Some of her key clients are major companies like Nike, Shell Oil, ING Bank, Tommy Hilfiger, and many others. She has given keynote presentations and seminars in more than 10 countries, and she has been frequently featured in global podcasts and publications, including the Huffington Post and the Financial Express. Passionate about diversity and inclusion and women in leadership, Sangrita also mentors startups, business leaders, and professionals. She carries a lot of energy, as her hobbies include dancing, kickboxing, and freediving. You can learn more about Sangrita Moitra on our website, 10lessonslearned.com. Hello, Sangrita. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for that phenomenal introduction. My brain is saying no pressure. So let's see how this goes. No, thank you so much for having me. It's such a wonderful opportunity to speak with you and be featured on TED.
Well, I'm looking forward to our conversation and your lessons. And I noticed that you are applying your background in neuroscience to help and motivate business leaders. What is that all about? How does that work?
That's a very good question. Most of the organizations that approach me, so there's two parts to it. There's the company part, the organizations that approach me, and then the individual. The organizations that approach me, many of which you've already mentioned in the intro, their challenge is that they're currently going through massive change, massive reorganization, transformation. And the problem they face is from their people side. And as you know, over 50% of change management processes and implementations fail when there is the resistance from the people side. So when they bring me in, they want to enable their human capital to overcome the resistance to change, to shift their mindset, to go from a fixed mindset to growth mindset, from juniors to executive leaders, and really enable them to, you know, be future forward. And where neuroscience plays a big role in all of this is I love to delve into the why, but from a very different perspective. It's very easy to talk about actions and behaviors. What often happens when we're going through change, you know, when we're kind of a ship in a storm, is people become very threatened, they feel defensive, and there's a lack of psychological safety. So with the power or the knowledge of neuroscience, when you take people into their brains and say, you know what? This is the reason why you're resisting change. It's literally evolutionary biology. This is what happens when you, you know, anticipate the pain of change. And you see the aha moment in their eyes when they realize, oh, I don't need to feel so defensive. I don't need to be so threatened. I don't need to feel so isolated, because this is fascinating. This is interesting. There's a way to hack our brain. And once I can invite and ignite this curiosity in people, I've seen that their barriers to resistance just drop and they become excited to know more about how they can learn, grow, evolve, and move forward in whatever. So that's where I think neuroscience plays this beautiful role in enabling people and organizations.
Yeah, it's so relevant for people to understand their own psyche, their own mental state. And if you can help them point at certain elements, and some of it is, you know, a process that every person goes through, but sometimes we are not even aware of that. That can be a lesson that people can use their whole life, their whole career, right? That's one of those aha moments, perhaps, that people say, oh, I got to make sure I keep that in mind. Thinking about that, and before we get into the 10 lessons, is there a lesson that you have learned that you would say, boy, if I would be 20 years old today, that's a lesson I would like to have learned at my younger age?
There is. I would give this lesson to myself right when I was 5. And I would remind myself on every birthday. And we'll get into why this at another time. But the lesson is that speak up and be assertive. However uncomfortable it feels, make your decision. Because if you don't speak up and you're not assertive and you don't make your decision, somebody else will make your decisions for you. And in this, oftentimes people, even adults, even leaders in their personal lives, their professional lives, in their career, the choices they make, oftentimes to avoid the pain of, you know, whatever short-term pain, we take decision that, you know, keep things fine in short-term, but actually long-term, they're going to affect you. So speak up for yourself, stand up for yourself, be assertive, make that decision, even if it's uncomfortable now, even if it will create discomfort with others a short while from now, because this will benefit you 10 years. That's what I would say to myself every year since the time I can comprehend language and decision making.
I like it, of course. At the same time, I can see situations where people, perhaps women, are in situations where they are not allowed to speak up. Is that something that you can process internally without literally verbally expressing your opinion?
I like to speak not just on behalf of women. I've seen men deal with this as well. And I'm not just a women-only speaker or coach or trainer. You know, I speak and help everybody. But yes, I have seen this happen to a lot of people. I've seen this happen to friends, family, colleagues, and I specifically say this beyond just a particular gender, because I've seen this happen so often. Also, the allow is also a perception. Nobody can disallow us, you know, perhaps in certain cultures where obedience can be such a strong system of a discipline of this is how you should be. You know, good people are quiet, you know, it's better to be seen and not heard and stuff like that. But I also think that if you dare to speak up, yeah, you might be seen as a bit of a problem person in the short term, but it's going to benefit you in the long term. But do you dare to, you know, to stand out a bit right now just so you can protect yourself, make the right choices for yourself? And I do think there is great strength and there is great clarity in knowing what you want, of course, being diplomatic and smart about it. But when the time comes, it's good to be active in your life than being a passive player, having other people make decisions for you.
I think it's very important what you're saying. Maybe that's the most important lesson of the lessons we're going to talk about. We're going to find out, but to stand up, speak out, I think that's very important. But let's take a look at your 10 lessons. I'm looking forward to the conversation. Lesson number one, fail small, fail fast, fail often.
Yes.
What about avoiding failure, not failing?
I love failure. Failure is awesome. It's fantastic. I see failure as experimentation. And failure itself, I think the word is fine. It's the emotions that we attach to it that create this entire, you know, push and pull, you know, this entire drama or melodrama in our mind. Of course, there are times when failure is extremely painful. I will not deny that. And I've also been affected by it. However, there's a reason why I say fail small, fast, often. So to say fail smart. What I mean by that is it's great to test your ideas in places where even if you fail, you stumble, you fall, you get the feedback you need. You can do it in a place that's, you know, psychologically safe. For example, before I give a huge keynote, I test my ideas with a small group of people locally or even with a mastermind group. And oftentimes I get very critical feedback. One of them even told me, Sangrita, I have to be very honest with you. This is not up to par. this is not what I expect from you. I expect way better from you. I've seen way better. Now, maybe for someone else, that can be really harsh and negative and they can get really bummed out. But I was like, this is fantastic. I mean, there is nothing that I can lose from this feedback. I failed small. I failed quickly. I failed in a place that gave me psychological safety. I got the feedback I needed. I was able to improve. So it's so critical for ourselves to test ourselves, to fail quickly, fail small, fail often, so that by the time we develop our idea, our vision, our product, it's at this amazing level that's gone through several rounds of feedback, and you just know that it's going to touch the heart and mind of your target decision maker, whoever that person is. So yeah, I do love experimenting with failure.
Yeah, and especially also you include fail small, like you said, right? It's not you say, oh, fail big. No, get used to it because it's part of our life. We cannot always be perfect and succeed everywhere. But when your mind is prepared to deal with failure, then it's easier to overcome failure. I like that. That makes a lot of sense. Lesson number two, personal branding elevates hard work.
Yes, I love that one.
Is that generational as well? I mean, personal branding, I can hear people tell me, you know, advanced in their lives and their careers, oh, I don't like personal branding. I don't believe in that. On the other hand, it's there, right? Whether they like it or not. There is an image that people create for themselves, whether they do it on purpose or not.
I think you raise a very good point, a very good point to think about, whether it's generational or not. As I was thinking when you asked me that question, I realized perhaps back in the day when personal branding, the term didn't exist, the ones who did it best, I think personal branding has happened for years, for like hundreds of years. The ones who did it best were either ones who really understood people, they really understood what they wanted, so very shrewd people, or the ones who were extroverted. The beauty of personal branding now is that knowledge and know-how is restricted to people who are just extroverted or just very shrewd. This is available for the introverts and the reserved and the shy one, because now you don't need to fit into a certain personality or just be born into a certain network to be able to stand out. Now, through the knowledge of personal branding, you can apply it. These techniques help you or enable you. They elevate the work you do, because the work you do, especially right now, I mean, we know how many hundreds and thousands of layoffs have happened across the world. I mean, just in the US, think of it from Jan 2023. In the Netherlands, I can't even tell you how many layoffs have happened. People are desperate. People are trying to stand out. Recently, a friend of mine applied for a head of marketing role. Can you guess how many people applied for that role in head of marketing at a graphic design company? Can you just guess off your head?
More than 200?
3,000. 3,000 people who have performed well, who have a fantastic CV, are applying for that job. So how are they going to stand out in the eyes of the recruiter? That's where personal branding comes into play. So personal branding is to show who you are, why you care about what you do. And I think that's a beautiful way to, you know, tie in your story with the job that you do or the career you aspire for.
Yeah. And when you talk about a job search, I typically recommend people, as far as their branding, to look at their key achievements that they would like to repeat in the future, right? Because that's your strength. But sometimes people say, look, I've been doing this for so long, I want to do something different. So you don't have to emphasize certain elements that you don't want to apply in the future, or indeed you emphasize your strength on things that you would like to repeat in the future. Again, we can have a long conversation about that. It's a great lesson. Personal branding elevates hard work. Let's take a look at lesson number three. Incremental gains trump big goals. How does that work?
I love small incremental chunks of growth. And actually, I've always been a big goal person for quite a few years. Until recently, let me rephrase that. Until recently, I was a big goal person. And it was always the big goal that drove me, motivated me, you know, thinking of the Everest every single day. And then I remember after lockdown, around 2021, I noticed, oh, the big goal is starting to tire me. And the big goal isn't really motivating me. Every single day that I think of my big goal, it's not really pushing me or motivating me or igniting me the way that it used to. So what am I going to do then? Then I realized that, okay, I have to change my strategy because I'm not doing the things that I love to do. I'm not growing as much as I want to, or even on the path of my, along the path that I want to, because I've just given up. So what I did is I had the big goal in mind. I wrote it down, kept it aside. And then I simply focused on the small activities. What are the small wins, the small rush, you know, that ignition of dopamine that I'm going to give myself, I'm going to gift myself. And I broke it down into smart, achievable goals. And they would be something like 15 minutes of jump roping a day. Or it could be, you know, whether it's your half an hour of walking or 15 minutes of writing. Whatever my goal set was, I just did small chunks of it. And I allowed myself to feel that dopamine rush at the end of, you know, at the end of this very achievable small chunk of goal. And I realized that over a period of time, these small habits were creating such a massive difference in my performance, whether it was in my physical activities like jump roping. I went from jump roping like a kid, you know, like two jumps and one rope turn, to doing over 50 boxer crossovers in one go. I can now jump rope for half an hour or an hour, actually, quite long uninterrupted. And these, it blew my mind when the day I decided I'm just going to see how far I can go instead of just doing it for 15 minutes, because I realized how far I had gone. The same with whatever personal, professional goals you have for yourself. Break it down into achievable chunks regularly, consistently, whether it's every day or three times a week at a particular time of the day, and you will be absolutely gobsmacked to see 3 months from now where that takes you. You realize, before you realize, you don't even realize that you've crossed base camp of Everest. So that's beautiful. So I do think small incremental chunks are fantastic for personal evolution.
I can also see that as we go through life, through our careers, that we learn new experiences that, I want to almost say, suddenly become very important, very relevant. And unfortunately, perhaps right now, I'm thinking of some negative situations when a dear family member or friend passes away. That can really make you think deep and hard about what life is all about and what you're doing yourself. If I think about, you know, unfortunate events around the world, for example, right now in Ukraine, that can impact people as they never expected before, if they see the suffering from other people, etc. And it could be in a positive way when they see people succeed and do well. They can say, hey, that's something I want to do. That's something I can do. So I can see that incremental gain on all sides can be extremely important to form ourselves as a human being. Yeah, I like that. Lesson number four. Confidence is a habit. Don't you have to build confidence?
Yes, absolutely. So it is something we need to build. Yeah. And habits are built. A lot of times I hear people who say, oh, you're so confident, or they're so confident, as if they were just born with generational wealth. Like, no, they had to work on it. And confidence is related to your skill set. So confidence is related to what you do. Self-esteem is about who you are. There's a difference. So if you're low on confidence, good news. It's much easier to build up confidence than it is to build up self-esteem. Of course, that requires a lot more work. So confidence is, since it's a skill related to skill set, it's a daily habit. Whether you practice something that you're good at every single day, so you know, you reward yourself with that feeling of I'm good. I'm good enough. I'm worthy. I deserve. Whatever it takes for you to spark that regular, you know, reminder, that's so important. And every person has different confidence habits. For me, for example, a couple of things that I do. One is that I do certain activities that I absolutely love in my spare time, and I make time for it. For example, when it's public speaking, I do public speaking for work, but I'm also a part of some just personal hobby public speaking groups and improv groups that I love to go in my free time. However busy I am, twice a month, I show up. And there, it's like a confidence booster. So twice a month, I ensure that for 4 hours, my confidence is being boosted. I go to certain dance classes or I do certain activities like kickboxing or whatever, jump roping. They boost my confidence. And the final thing that I do that is so important is that I made a folder with all the positive words I've ever received. You know, I keep it updated, whether it's through my LinkedIn messages, phone messages, emails. People often give me little scraps of paper sometimes when in a public speaking event, you know, as a thank you note. And I keep them all and I save them. And on the days when I'm feeling like, oh, am I good enough? Or, you know, those limiting belief thoughts come up, I make sure that I go and read that. I go and read all those positive words that remind me that I matter, that people see value in me, that I am adding some benefit to them. When you're feeling low, when you're not feeling confident enough, it's very easy to not do these habits and just feel pity for yourself. But I think self-pity is also the greatest addiction out there. So to break that, I very proactively, consciously implement these three habits, and I see how powerful they can be to make you genuinely, authentically every day.
I think it's extremely important what you're just saying here, to be able to, can I say, train your brain. I was actually reading a story written by a U.S. Navy SEAL, Marine officer. They go through high pressure exercises, of course, and deal with very serious issues. And in the article that he wrote, he talked about when he is involved in an exercise where physically and perhaps mentally he's ready to give up. He goes to a place in his brain that gives him, as you explain, the confidence. And I think that's for many people so important, that there is a place that you are prepared for to say, wow, I'm dealing with lots of pressure and whatever it may be, but there is a place in your brain that you can go to and say, okay, yes, I'm prepared for this. I can do this because of I've done these things to prepare. I think it's extremely important because every person goes through that and goes through a moment of, I almost want to say despair, and sometimes it is despair and worse than despair, but where can they find themselves to say, I can deal with this, I can handle this? And it's not always easy. It can be extremely difficult, but I think it's a great recommendation that you make, that we should all look for that space in our own brain. I think that's very relevant. Moving along, lesson number 5, I already like it. Your network is your net worth. So relevant, but I'll let you talk.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much. And network is your net worth. Absolutely. And I have heard, I mean, there's so much to talk about the network part. Networking is not just, you know, I hear people say, oh, you have to have a pitch ready when you network. And back in the day, I used to think, oh yeah, you got to have your pitch ready. And now I'm like, oh gosh, no. If you have to pitch, you must pitch without pitching. The point is, with your network, it's this beautiful moment of evolution when you choose to align with your intention, your passion, your purpose, and you choose to surround yourself with people who ignite all three of those, your intention, your passion, your purpose. You surround yourself with people who will cheerlead for you, support you, empower you in your growth ahead, who you know you will do the same for them in return. Just this amazing intentional group of people who choose to be together to evolve with it. That's the power of your network. And it can take you from, you know, the place where you can only dream of who you want to be to the place where you are who you want to be. So to me, power of network is amazing. In fact, it's not about how many people, but the quality of the few you know. And that's why I always encourage people, it's when you go networking, it's not about how many business cards you've dealt across the room. Well, now people don't even use business cards anymore. Or how many people you've added on LinkedIn or exchanged numbers. But really, how many meaningful conversations have you had? How many coffees are you going to have after that? How many people are you really going to engage with and build a relationship? Networking is beautiful, so powerful, and it actually benefits your personal and professional transformation.
I want to steal a comment from our producer, Robert Hossery, who always talks about, and it's one of his lessons in his podcast interview, when it comes to networking, it's not so much who you know, more importantly, who knows you, right? So when you have a networking exercise, it's very important that, yes, you get to know people, but perhaps more relevant in that networking purpose is who gets to know you. I just wanted to add that because I think it's easy to underestimate the value of your network. And sometimes if it is an official networking meeting, it almost looks like it's made up. It has to be genuine. It has to click between people, right? And that's what's going to create a lasting impression, I think.
Yeah. I recently made a video on networking, actually, which I posted on LinkedIn. And there I talked about, do you need to be an extrovert to network? And I absolutely do not believe that. But there are three things you need to be, and echoes what your producer said. So I think your producer and I would have a lovely conversation someday. Robert, I agree with you. Because the three things that I believe we absolutely need to be to have us to build a solid network is we need to be strategic, intentional, and interesting. And the part about interesting is exactly what he said, that networking is not just about who you know or chasing people you want to meet, but really attracting your dream decision maker, the people who inspire you to you. And for that, you have to ask yourself, what kind of life will I lead? What kind of choices will I make? What kind of integrity will I represent to draw those people to me? So yes, you know, you have to build yourself to be the person who attracts those dream people to you.
We are talking today with Sambrita Moitra, a globally renowned keynote speaker and executive leadership coach on neuroscience-driven change, culture, and leadership development, sharing her 10 lessons learned. I want to thank our affiliate partner, Audible. Audible is an amazing way to experience our program, 10 Lessons Learned, but also books and other podcasts, allowing you to build a library of knowledge all in one place. You can start your free 30-day trial by going to audibletrial.com/10lessonslearned. Again, that is audibletrial.com/10lessonslearned, all lowercase, to get your free 30-day subscription. Moving along, lesson number 6. Rejections and failures build mindset. Curious about that one.
Yeah, this one is also a personal favorite. Well, all 10 of them, they're like Sophie's choice. How do you choose? Choosing between my baby. No, I'm joking. And when it comes to rejections and failures, so here's the thing. A lot of people want to avoid rejection because rejection is painful. And here's the thing about the human brain. Our brain is wired to avoid pain more than pursue pleasure. Related to what I mentioned earlier about short-term gratification, long-term gratification, that if we have to deal with pain in the short term for pleasure in the long term, most people would still avoid going through that journey altogether. So when it comes to, let's say, career growth, you know, pursuing something you really want, whether you want to start something new in your career, in your life, you want to go out there, ask for something you so rightly deserve, but you're afraid of being rejected, that fear holds you back from ever asking for it. The danger, as you can imagine, is that, you know, you stay stuck in that fixed mindset, only wishing and hoping that you could be someone else or you want to, you know, create a version of yourself. So the power of mindset here is that, and this is something I learned from neuroscience, is you can find a way to pain. You can find a way to hack the brain to actually allow rejections and failures to build your mindset and strengthen you. For example, I created this challenge called the 10 No Challenge. It was so much fun. Basically, I challenged my audiences, my attendees at trainings and workshops that every single time you get a rejection, it has to be, let's say you make a list of things you really want for yourself, whether you want to change your job, you want to ask for a salary hike, you want to start your own business, you want to become a TEDx speaker, you want to start your podcast, whatever it is, and you make that list. Prepare for it, and then you go out there, start meeting people, asking for stuff, whatever it is that you want. And then, of course, you're going to get rejections along the way. People might not want to have that coffee with you. People might not want to give you that opportunity. But here's the catch. Every single time you get the rejection, it has to be the trigger or the signal for you to pursue the next no. So instead of chasing only yeses, this 10 no challenge is to pursue 10 no's. Why? The reason is in your brain, you're hacking the pain pathway and you're doing a rewarding pathway. Every time you get a no, your brain goes, okay, time to pursue the next no. You won't believe it. This lady in a conference came up to me and said, Sangrita, guess what? I already asked for two things this conference, and I got rejected twice. And she said,
all right,
two down, eight to go. And I thought, wow, I've never seen someone rejected twice on the same day look this happy. So I could see that she had replaced her pain pathway with her rewarding pathway. This became a game. She gamified the process. The second reason for how rejections build mindset is, alongside all the no's that you get, you will also receive those few yeses. And these are yeses you never dared to ask for yourself. These are yeses that you never imagined could be part of your life or career. And these yeses can completely transform the trajectory of your path. So this is why I so deeply, strongly, passionately believe that rejection, strategically pursuing rejection, build our mindset.
It's a very important point again. And definitely, I can think of experiences that I have had, and of course, everybody else has had, being rejected. And perhaps after so many years, it doesn't get to me anymore. And it's more like I'm reaching out to these people to do them a favor. And if they don't appreciate that, in a way, to make myself feel better, it's their problem. Now, it's my problem too, but I don't make it my problem. I'm doing them a favor by reaching out. And at the same time, and that's what you're talking about in some of these other lessons as well, to really prepare your brain, because the unexpected situation, it's like you're driving your car and suddenly your car breaks down, and perhaps it's you're in the evening or in the middle of the night. What are you going to do? Well, hopefully there is a service available to help you out, or you have a relative, someone you can contact, etc. But to be prepared for those moments, because we all go through it. We're human beings. So sometimes you get rejected and you have to have a strong mindset, as you suggest. I like it. Lesson number 7, a no is merely an opinion.
Yes.
Please explain before I start asking questions.
This one was a lesson I've learned about 5 years ago. Very consciously, I noticed this lesson happened 5 years ago. But I see it happen over and over again. For example, there was a massive corporate that I was in conversation with a person from a massive corporate about doing some, talks and trainings with them. However, wasn't quite clicking with this particular person. Perhaps they were looking for something else, or they just weren't aligned with their personal team's development plans. And they said, sorry, I don't think it's going to work with their company, like insert name of company. And at first I thought, oh, what a pity all these conversations didn't work out. And I thought, hold on, who said that this person is the only representative of this entire company with 5,000 people? Their no is merely their opinion. It's merely related to their department and their personal idea of what is and isn't possible. So does that mean I'm not going to ever have an opportunity with this company again? No way. And I let it be. I continued, doing my work, meeting people, creating impact. And well, what do you know? About 6 months later, I had someone else from that company approach me to do the exact same thing. And it worked out. So no is merely an opinion. And I say this even to people, for example, right now, a lot of your viewers in your listeners might be working in companies. They get negative feedback and a lot of them are told, oh, we don't see it in you to get promoted, to be a leader. For them to get the opportunity to the next level, and it completely devastates them.
Yeah.
But when you get that no, I think it's great to get back to them with a question. Like, for example, when someone, a mentee of mine said, or someone I was coaching said that, they got this feedback at work that they don't have those leadership abilities in them. Question is, and does this person who gave you the feedback, who said no to you, who are they speaking for? Are they speaking for the organization or their personal perspective of what leadership is? What do they think leadership is? Can they define leadership? And do they think that their personal opinion of leadership is the only one that represents this entire company? And actually, when they went back to the discussion board, the line manager was quite short of words, and they were able to raise a case, and that my coachee did get promoted because she raised it, escalated the case.
So that's good. Yeah.
Because you hear, just an opinion. A no is merely an opinion. It doesn't mean that there is no other way for you to move forward.
Yeah. I think the challenge for many people is that, let's say, the boss is always right, even when he or she is not, right? In their mind, hey, I'm the boss. I'm telling you, you should do this. You should not do that. Go do it. And
I think, and sorry, I'm interrupting.
No, I mean, we're talking here about this simple issue where there is an individual in a powerful position that will make his or her opinion be the one to follow. And yeah, I can see there is maybe something to say because that person has the ultimate responsibility and therefore this is what we're going to do. But that's also then a response for, let's say, the employee to say, is this the environment that I want to work in?
I hear what you're saying. And oftentimes I have noticed that even though you might not have the leadership position in the company, there's someone senior you're speaking with. If you ask the right strategic questions, much like a coach, you can actually lead the conversation. So if someone gives you feedback, like, I don't think you have the leadership abilities in you, you're like, oh, that's an interesting feedback. Thank you for sharing your opinion. Why do you say that? What do you consider to be leadership ability? And then by asking questions in a non-threatening, non-alpha, you know, non-ooga-ooga gorilla way, by being very strategic and firm in the way we approach these conversations, you can completely change that conversation around and without even suggesting it, make the other party realize, oh, actually, they do have a point. Okay, fair enough. They did show leadership in a different way. That's another like 3-hour workshop. How do you get that to happen? How do you get someone to change your mind? But it is possible, which is why I truly believe that no is just an opinion. We can turn that no into a yes.
And it's the way you, let's say, as a counterpart, the way you address it. It's not just say, hey, I disagree and you have to listen to me. That's what you're saying, right? You have to bring it up in a constructive way and suggestive way that perhaps there are alternative ways of solving a problem or handling certain situations.
Absolutely. I even say never use the word disagree, but reframe it in a way that sounds much more collaborative. I think the most important thing in these kind of scenarios is how do you show collaboration and actually strategically navigate the course of this discussion of this sensitive topic towards the outcome you want without people feeling threatened or defensive.
Makes sense. And my mind is saying I need to introduce you to a few people that I know that perhaps need to change their minds on things, but we all have those, right? Lesson number 8. Not a surprise here, because this is what you're doing. Speak up to stand out. That fits you really well.
Thank you. Yes, I think it's one of the most essential skills, habits, attributes we need in the current professional landscape, whether you're a business owner, whether you are a corporate employee, whether you're starting out, whether you're leading executive. It's so important to know how to speak up and represent yourself to really build that unique identity for yourself. Also, when you are speaking up, you're also showing your integrity. You're showing, you know, what are the values, what is the legacy that you stand for, that you represent. And when you speak up for yourself or others, you champion for a particular cause, whatever that might be, that becomes your reputation. That becomes how people remember you. When you speak a certain way, when you express yourself a certain way, you impact how people feel. So yeah, I do believe that speaking up is so essential to creating that unique identity and impact in whatever it is that we want to do and the change we want to bring.
It's not always easy, right, to do that, to speak up. I had a situation a few years ago when the U.S. government made a decision to separate children at the border with the United States, to separate children from their families. And living here in a border state, Arizona, I did not like that. They were not my children. They were not my family. But I did speak out. And it got me into a certain level of trouble. I can give details, but that's not relevant for our conversation right now. And I had to really give it some thought because I didn't want to be in trouble. And at the same time, it was a matter of principle. And looking back, I have no regrets that I spoke out. And I think that's, you know, a moral issue. There could be other issues, like you said, but you have to go with your own gut, with your own feeling, and especially when it is a matter of principle, to be able to speak up and stand out, I think very valuable.
Absolutely. And also, I think it's very relevant and on how we speak. So there is strategy, you know, it goes without saying, every point that I've mentioned in my 10 lessons learned are about how to be strategic about each point to get to the outcome that you want. So speaking up doesn't always have to be, you know, the one with a finger raised in the air and creating the, you know, ruckus and I have a problem, I'm upset and I want the whole world to know about it. That's not my intention with speaking. But speaking up is, how am I going to impact people? How do I want them to remember me? How do I want them to feel about me, about themselves? You know, how am I going to inspire people? So that's the power of speaking up to stand out. And I think, I'm sure, knowing you, you must have spoken up so beautifully and inspirationally. And that's what I also want people to remember. It being strategic in how and when you speak up to create the impact you want.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I appreciate that important lesson. Lesson number 9. The only one counting how often and how hard you failed is you. Great lesson.
Yes, thank you. And I think failure has come up so many times in my lessons, and they're all like different facets of a kaleidoscope, perhaps. And I think failure is a fascinating topic to discuss. And indeed, I come across so many people who beat themselves up about something that went wrong and awry, and they think, oh my God, I can never show my face again. Oh my God, I never want to go for that opportunity again because everybody knows that I failed. Well, I've had the same journey as well. There has been a time when I was beating myself up about every single thing that didn't go right. Like, let's say out of 5 great experiences, let's say 5 great talks and trainings I gave, 4 were fantastic, 1 didn't work out. Instead of celebrating those 4, I was beating myself up about that one thing that didn't work out, that perhaps I wasn't a 10 on 10, because I was saying, oh my gosh, I can't believe I was a 7 on 10 or a 7.5 on 10. Nobody wants to work with a 7 on 10. What about all those other 4 moments of fantastic performance? So the funny thing is, the moment you bounce back, you choose to show up, stand up, speak up again, you will realize how forgiving people are. You know, Michael Jordan also said he's lost more shots, he's missed more shots than he's actually made. People don't count how many shots he's missed. People love him, remember him, respect him, value him for what he did right, for what he did well. It just takes those few successes to really make an impact. No one's counting how many, you know, times you felt you were a failure. And I had the same experience as well, that when I was beating myself up and I thought, oh my gosh, I don't want to be visible anymore. I want to be safe. But I wasn't happy being safe and invisible, not speaking my mind, pursuing my passion. And when I came back to the limelight, I started giving those talks and trainings again. Nobody cared about the time that I, you know, nobody cared that I wasn't around. All they cared about was, we'd love to learn more from you. We'd love to know more from you. Tell us more. So people are so kind, so forgiving, so not only forgiving, but also they don't even remember that, you know, you went through an episode, that you went through a tough. In fact, many times, for example, when people are speaking on stage and they say, oh my gosh, I can't believe I forgot half of my entire talk, or I forgot to mention that extremely important point. Well, you know what? The audience didn't even know. They thought you were the best ever. So that's why it's good to have high standards, but not beat yourself up. It's okay to be kind to yourself.
I'm really curious, listening to you, Sambrita, considered writing a book?
Yes.
Is that something you're going to do? Are you working on it already?
I am working on it, yes. Well, very interesting. How did you know? Did I tell you already?
No, you didn't. But I'm listening to you. And these lessons, I think, are very important for people.
Thank you. You are so kind. And I would love to talk about these topics in great detail as well.
Well, it kind of leads to lesson number 10, right? A goal without a plan is just a dream.
Yes, absolutely. I live and breathe this. And this is actually such a big reflection of my personal life and journey as well. I think you already know that I came to the Netherlands as a student. I was an international student. I didn't know anybody. Started my life from scratch, and I've had so many career changes along the way. Before I came here, I already had this preset plan. I was going to do lab and research life. I was going to do my PhD. Then I came here, started doing my master's. Midway, I realized, oh gosh, I don't want that. I don't want that plan. I don't want the lab and research life. It's not my dream. It's perhaps someone else's dream. Maybe my family's dream, but not mine. I want to do more work with people. And, you know, from there to working in pharma, to starting my own advisory, speaking, training, consulting, coaching, all this happened. And oftentimes people ask me, but how did you do it? You didn't know anybody here. How did you get to work with all these companies? How did you travel to over 10 countries? How did you speak to 5,000, 10,000 people? All of that is because of turning that dream into a very strategic plan into these very achievable goals. And this is where the juxtaposition of big goals and small incremental growth is powerful. All these lessons that I've mentioned have led me to do the things that I've been able to do, so privileged to do, so lucky to do, so fortunate. So my own journey from being a research student into being a speaker and advisor and trainer and coach on how neuroscience can, transform the way you're building your culture, your communication, your change program in companies, but also for individual growth, for your confidence, growth mindset, overcoming resistance, overcoming rejection, the fear of rejection and failure, speaking up, standing up. All of this has been possible because I've had to turn every crazy dream into a very achievable.
But you had an open mind to learning, right?
I had no other option. I don't know what it's like to live with a dream and let it be.
Well, maybe there's your answer indeed. Yeah.
I'm also someone who cannot imagine my future looking back and regretting I did this. And I know that if I didn't pursue this, perhaps I wouldn't even, it's okay if I didn't achieve these goals. That's fine. And there are goals I still haven't achieved. I don't know if I ever will. But I am so thankful that I am on the journey of experimenting, testing, aiming, dreaming, envisioning, doing, whether I achieve the goal or not. Because if I don't go through this journey, I will not be happy. I will regret that I didn't try. So, yes, for me, the journey is so important. It's perhaps more fulfilling to me than the destination.
Wow, very inspirational. And in that thought process, I'm curious, Sangeeta, are there any lessons or one particular lesson in your life, in your career that you have unlearned where you decided, I got to change my way, I got to do this differently?
I think all of them have been lessons that I've unlearned and relearned. For example, that big shift from only thinking big goals to really understanding that it's about those small incremental gains that give confidence, that build your stamina, that build your expertise, on a daily basis. Whether it's the change of mindset from thinking, oh, networking, I'm going to go into the room and 100 business cards should be over by the end of the evening. I should have everyone's contact. I should have spoken to everyone, to that big shift in it's not how many people you know, it's about the number of people, like the quality of people you know and who know you. I'd rather have those meaningful relationships. Then the third one, of course, would be that failure doesn't devastate it. And that failure can be your friend. Failure can be fun with experimenting. And as well with, that instead of beating yourself up with failure, during failure, you can also be kind to yourself and realize people are so accepting, so embracing. And at the end of the day, most people out there just want you to succeed. These were lessons that really enabled and inspired.
Again, very inspirational, very powerful. And thank you. Thank you for joining us, but also thank you for sharing your wisdom with our global audience. Much appreciated. Thank you. In closing, I want to make a few remarks. You've been listening to our international program, 10 Lessons Learned. This episode is produced by Robert Hossery. And as always, we are supported by the Professional Development Forum. Our guest today is Sangeeta Moitra, the globally renowned keynote speaker and executive leadership coach on neuroscience-driven change, culture, and leadership development, sharing her 10 lessons learned. And to our audience, don't forget to leave us a review or a comment. You can also email us at podcast at 10lessonslearned.com, and I hope you will subscribe so that you miss any future episodes. And remember, this is a podcast that makes the world wiser and wiser, lesson by lesson. Thank you, and stay safe.